to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We've got to stop them! They're going to kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they a government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone, or human beings.
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious. Makes you so sick at heart that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Right, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
Welcome to Crypt Rick's I've Been Thinking. What's this show all about? Well, it's all in the title. He enjoys interviewing people about issues that he finds interesting and which cause him to sit back and think. Cryptocurrency, true crime, natural law, the occult. No topic is off limits here. He has always enjoyed when people give their points of view or thoughts on different topics that they have researched. And what makes it all great is that it's their unique take on what is being discussed. For that reason alone, it makes it interesting to him. So take that walk down to his crypt. Make yourself comfortable. And just maybe, he will be discussing a topic that you have been thinking about. Here's your host, Crypt Rick.
Welcome, everybody. We just took the long walk and the crypt is open. Welcome. It is Monday. Hope everybody's had a great weekend. Busy weekend here I had because it was Canada Day. So what did we do? We had guests over for a couple days and it was busy, but it was a lot of fun. And it was great because, hey, organically, I'm kind of forming a community around me, which is kind of cool. And it's happening really shockingly and simply. Is a good way to put it. It's just something that, like I said, is very organically happening. And it was really cool to actually have a lot of people over and from the same community, from my same neighborhood, people that would have never probably talked a year ago are now talking and we're, you know, exchanging ideas and all kinds of things. It was really interesting. So it was a great weekend. And I hope you guys had a great weekend as well. Had a great show with my co-host, Jonathan Wright. We did our last Saturday show. But we will be doing our new show. It's just changed. It's the same thing. Crypt Rick and Jonathan show, but it has moved to Thursdays. We will be in Studio A from the same time, 6 to 8 p.m. So just make sure you mark that down. Won't be back on Saturdays, but Thursdays is going to be the new day. So we have our first show for the new day coming up this Thursday. And, hey, another incredible guest. It's going to be a great show. So please, guys, check it out. And I think this is going to be another amazing show. But before I go ahead, get my guest on, I always like to remind everyone here at Revolution Radio, listener supported. We're number one listener supported radio station actually out there. And it's because of your guys' generosity that keeps us here every week and all the amazing hosts here doing their shows every day of the week. And what makes it so special is there is freedom of speech is alive and well here. We don't have to worry about being censored. We don't have to worry about our information being pulled down like all of these major platforms are doing. I hear about it every week. Somebody I know is either getting a video taken down. They're getting their whole channel removed. So, hey, they're doing their best to silence people from talking about important topics if it does not follow their agenda of what they want you to hear. So, To me, I think that is so important to support, and a great way to do that. There's many ways you can donate here at Revolution Radio. Head over to revolutionradio.com, head up to the top, and then just look for the donation section. And there's so many ways you can donate. There is Bitcoin, there's Bitcoin Cash and Ethereum if you do cryptocurrency. There is also Patreon, so you can go ahead, set an amount that you want to donate. Patreon takes care of it for you guys, and it happens every month. That's a great way to support, and you can also mail it in. Believe it or not, you can still mail things in. It's slow, but it works, and it does not matter the amount. Any amount is amazing, small, big. It all adds up in the end to keep everyone here doing their content, doing their shows 7 days a week, guys. Very special. And like I said, you're allowed to cover anything that you want, which I think is so important. It's just, it's key. This fight for freedom right now, this fight for truth is so important, and I really do believe we're on this. The scales are tipping, and I really don't, you know, it can go either way, in my opinion, and I think that that is, you know, they're doing their best to silence people from speaking out about certain topics, but here we can do that. So thank you guys for everyone who has supported, who is donating, who has donated, because we truly would not be here if it wasn't for you guys. And that's just the truth. I like to keep it real with you guys. So thank you so much. And I also want to say hello to everyone in the chat room. I am in the chat. I'm going to try to keep an eye on it. And if you guys have any questions for my guests, just let me know and I can ask for you. So just wanted to get all that out of the way, guys. And to introduce my guest, I'm very excited. This is a topic I think that needs to be covered more. And I've kind of hinted on it. We've brought it up in other shows. And I think that talking about our traumas is so important. I think it is the thing that a lot of people are not doing. And I think there's so many different reasons why they're not doing it. I think they're shamed into not doing it. They're called weak. They bury it down, tough it up, you know, ignore it. And don't look into things that are uncomfortable and dark. There's so many reasons I've heard. And I kind of went down that path, as I've told you guys before. And all it got me was being an alcoholic and not dealing with anything. And real change didn't happen until I acknowledged these traumas that I had growing up. We all have them, whether they're big, they're small. I truly believe we all have traumas that we're not, you know, that you're either dealing with or you're not. It's that simple. And if you're not dealing with them, they're going to manifest. They're going to rear their head eventually. And there's so many different ways that they can do this. So I think this is an important topic, something that needs to be discussed way, way, way more. Because, as I said just now, we all have them. They're there and we have to deal with them. So with that out of the way, I want to welcome my guest, Leslie Powers. I'm excited to have you here. You're fresh off Funnel 3, which was a great 2-day conference, which was amazing online. So many great people there doing presentations. It was incredible. And you did an incredible presentation there as well. Hopefully people will check it out. Remember, go to freedomundernaturallaw.com. And then you can also go on YouTube, check Freedom Under Natural Law in there, and you're going to find all of the presentations there. Please check out Leslie's, because it's powerful, it's important, and I'm so happy to have her here, because I think she talks about trauma and breaks it down and the effects of it brilliantly, to be honest. I really do think she does. So I'm happy to have you here, Leslie. Welcome to the show. It's great to have you here.
So much thanks to you, Rick, for inviting me on and supporting my work and the work of all of our natural law content creators. You know, your involvement in Funnel was wonderful.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And it was a great one. I talked about it last week with Chris and Chris Jansen, who I had on. We were really breaking down like what we liked about it, like some of the presenters and the topics they were covering. It was so powerful. So I'll make sure I leave a link in the chat room, guys, so you can go and check out the presentations. And please check out Leslie's, because I think this is a great topic. It's a complicated topic, I think, Leslie. I think it's a topic people make people uncomfortable at times. But maybe you can let people just know a little bit about yourself, the work you do, and then we can really dive in and start looking into this.
Where are you there, Rick?
I'm still here. You still there?
Plug in my headphones.
So, all right.
Make sure. Okay, there we go. So we get a little better sound. Excellent. Yeah, so I was a presenter at Freedom Under Natural Law, and our third conference was this past week, two weekends ago. Mm-hmm. My presentation was called Release from Trauma, and it was a basic introduction into the complexities of how trauma affects our lives. And a really big part of what I wanted to get across was to normalize, in a sense, the ways that people are we are all traumatized to some extent. And that people, I want to break down some of the stigma or the beliefs that, you know, only people who have been through horrific abuses, you know, are traumatized, right? And that's it's true that there are people who have survived horrific traumatic events, abuses, rapes, accidents, you know, all sorts of things. But then we forget or we're not aware that we are all, you know, experiencing the effects of trauma. And some of these happen through things that we normalize in life. A lot of normal parenting philosophies end up causing some emotional long-term harm to children and that are still part of an adult's way they interact with the world. So I'm trying to open up, you know, people's awareness to look at themselves and to start to have more compassion and awareness of how patterns and chaos in their life may be related directly to childhood experiences or other heightened stress experiences in their life.
Right. Very, very, very true. And I remember I first saw your presentation for Funnel 2, and you did a presentation, and you were, that's, I think, the first one I ever saw by you. It was either Funnel 1 or Funnel 2. It was one of them. And you, I came across it, and you were really talking about trauma, and it resonated with me right when I saw it. And it really did change my life, Leslie, because I've recognized I've had traumas in my life. I've had, and people know about my condition I deal with on a daily basis. That's definitely a major trauma, but yeah. So I've always been dealing with them. But when I started to see your work and how you broke it down, it really made me think about it deeper, because I love the way that you just said that people think that these traumas have to be something like extreme. Like, I mean, like you said, a rape or some like violence done to you and that, but they can be subtle. And I remember in your presentation, you were talking about big traumas and little traumas. I love that way you word that, because I don't think people think of the little ones, and you bring that up with childhood. I've also, this may sound crazy, but I've actually sat back and thought, you know, just being born, is that a trauma? Like, is that your first, like, I mean, I just think of how violent giving birth is in a way. And I'm like, is that something that imprints right when you're born? Is that your first, maybe little, big? I don't know. It's weird.
I mean, the very act of birth could, depending on how the process goes, right? Because a lot of hospital births are traumatic. And, you know, because of a variety of factors, least of which is that, you know, women are not being encouraged to follow their own natural instincts of like the body position to be in or how to breathe or who to have around or who's allowed in the room, right? And, you know, there's some practices of whisking a baby away from the mother almost immediately, taking babies and putting them in incubators or in little heated rooms to heat them up rather than wrapping them on their mother's chest, you know, and different things. So right from the gate, there is sometimes, you know, like separation.
I would think so.
Between the baby and the mother. And that separation is an unremembered source of trauma for a lot, for some people, right? Yeah. And, we have different parenting, you know, models that encourage, you know, let babies cry it out, don't respond, you know, put them on a schedule, a sleep schedule or a eating schedule way before they're biologically and emotionally prepared. They don't have the actual competency or skills physiologically to handle that type of almost like abandonment, a mini abandonment. You know, for example, if a child is hungry, a baby, an infant, think infant, right, with a little tiny tummy, and they're hungry and they cry, they're seeking attunement. They're seeking to be soothed, to feel safe in their bodies, safe in their systems. So if a parent has been given bad advice and told, just let the baby cry themselves to sleep and feed them at 9 a.m., you know, 11 mm-hmm. to whatever time frame, and it doesn't match their need, there's a physiological response of stress in that Absolutely. Infant. And that is a big, could be a beginning, right, of an accumulation of a pattern that a person develops to ignore or shut down their natural needs.
Makes and so much sense.
To yeah. end up being in somewhat of a freeze state, you know, when it and disconnection from your own body's needs. You yeah. know, the school system continues this by telling kids that they can't go to the bathroom when they have to, that they have to hold it and sit until the bell rings, mm-hmm. or, you know, you have to run, you have 2 minutes, 3 minutes or whatever to get from one class to the other. And there's lots of abnormal pressures to totally ignore your own needs as
yeah,
a human,
it's
right?
True.
To
yeah.
fit into this structure. And unfortunately, that is so considered so normal that it's me saying this could be seen as like, he's crazy, woman. Like, what are you talking about? Mm-hmm. You're being weak, you know, whatever. Because we are incredibly adaptable creatures. And
I agree,
and that's
yeah.
what the story is really around trauma, is to learn how our incredible nervous system adapts to stress and to abuse and to being ignored or, you know, misunderstood, right? How does our system survive despite things that are counter to our actual body's wisdom right. or our actual yeah. needs?
That makes a lot of sense. And I'm glad that we started actually at birth, now that I think about it, because I do – I've done interviews with people and we get into, like, you know, natural law birth, we call it.
Yeah.
And, you know, how unnatural it is for the way that they do things now. And I know that there is a kind of people getting more motivated to do it other ways. They're trying to get away from that. But I just think about the whole hospital environment, how unnatural that is. When you do it, like, just, if I tell people, open a history book and look at, you know, how the tribes used to do it. You know, a birth was a big celebration. The whole village was involved. Like, it was
yeah.
like a big celebration, and yeah. everybody took part in raising the child. Like, so they had met like many mothers, many grandmothers, many, it's really interesting when you look into
yeah.
it. And then how that now it's so clinical. Like, and
right.
I mean, you got, and I just think, like, for a child, these big bright lights on them, and you got people,
yeah.
poke it at the mother, and then, like you said, to me, which seems so crazy, they separate the mother so young, that that's the, I think the most crucial moment for a mother and child is that second that you have that contact,
yeah.
like you're out that, on the chest, that contact, there's something,
yeah, the eye gazing, you
yeah.
know, the smell,
yep.
right, all of the nonverbals, because the infant doesn't even develop the left hemisphere of his or her brain until they're like 18 months old. So it's all right brain. It's all about the nonverbals and the sense of touch and mm-hmm. the tone of voice and the responsivity to the baby's needs. And it's so crucial that there be this bond, this time allowed for a mother and baby to be together. Some people call it the fourth trimester,
okay.
where it's optimal to keep the mother and baby super connected in that hopefully nursing relationship, with that a gentle introduction of the child to the stimulation of the bigger world, right?
Wow.
To decrease some of the shock. And to create that solid bond of attunement, that solid bond of relationship, which is a core need for all people to feel seen, soothed, and safe. And that starts at birth in that first primary relationship, which is with the mother.
Yeah. It makes a lot of sense, let's say, when you break it down like that. I think about, I mean, it's crazy some of the things I kind of think about, but that's what I honestly did. I sat for a long time, and I still do, thinking about that. Is that our first introduction to a trauma? I don't know. I mean, people are going, you don't remember that as a child. And then we get into other things where I think then I've had discussions about circumcision and that, you know, at such a young age, that's got to be a trauma. I've heard people say you don't remember that, the baby, it's, and I really have trouble about that. I think they do remember it.
The body remembers. Okay.
Exactly.
So you think about the left brain memory, which is analytical memory. It's the kind of thing you do in school to memorize facts. It's all left brain. And that doesn't develop, like I said, until about 18 months. But the memory is stored in a different place. It's not intellectual. It's not in words, because language doesn't develop until after much, you know, till later.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's stored in the body. The body is an extension of our mind, is how I've come to see it. The nervous system and the vagus nerve, which is connected from our brain down our throat into our chest and gut, it's this long system of nerves, which is how our system communicates with itself.
Makes sense, yeah.
Yeah.
So then, I've had trouble when people say that. I'm like, somewhere. And I tend to agree with you, Leslie, that, you know, you may not mentally remember it. Like, it's not a thought that you just go back to and go, oh, okay, yeah, I remember this moment that this trauma was done to me. But I truly believe, like you said, your body remembers.
Right. And it's expressed in symptoms. So there's a slide in my presentation, which I took from a guide. Let me find it. Actually, a guide meant for clinicians from Janina Fisher. But the first slide is trauma survivors have symptoms instead of memories. So many people are totally disconnected cognitively from the severely stressful experiences of their life, because our system, it's not conducive to functioning for survival in the concrete things, getting, you know, going to work, gathering food. You know, we're all in this very high-paced life where we're really living, a lot of us are living in a level of survival mode, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so it's not really helpful, you know, to be flooded with emotion when you're supposed to be, you know, doing a business transaction or something, right?
Right.
So a lot of times, you know, we grow up and we have experiences and we're not given the opportunity to process them and allow that energy to dissipate from our bodies. And instead it gets trapped energetically in the system, in the nervous system. The fight or flight energy gets halted. It's incomplete and it becomes frozen in our system. So then we can lose the memory of the related cause of those experiences. We may have no real idea, but what we do have are other types of symptoms in our present day life. So that could be depression, irritability, you know, just kind of blasé, lack of interest in things, feeling a bit shut down or numb, having trouble concentrating or focusing. I think a lot of people think they have ADHD, and it's more related to unprocessed trauma. Insomnia or other sleep problems, just feeling overwhelm, sense of hopelessness or disconnection from life, not feeling hope for yourself, for your future, or for the world, feeling shame, loss of memories, nightmares or flashbacks, mistrust in relationships, that's sort of a general pattern of mistrust or hypervigilance, generalized anxiety or panic attacks, substance abuse or eating disorders, feeling out of body or unreal, any kind of self-destructive pattern of behavior, and just generally losing a sense of who I am. Those are a whole list of symptoms that generally indicate that there's some unresolved, unhealed trauma. And the symptoms are a portal. They're our friend, in a sense, to open us up to learn more deeply about ourselves and where we need healing.
That really makes a lot of sense, Leslie. And but what's it's kind of interesting. Like, I got a million questions now because of what you just said. Like, I'm just thinking, you know, like you hear as you're growing up, you know, like it, like if these things happen to you, it's just part of growing up. It's life, you know, life is tough at times, you know, suck it up kind of thing. And, but I really think that that's, like you said, that it becomes something that accumulates. I'm looking at trauma, at least for me, I can only speak for myself because I know myself, but for me, the traumas in my life, the more I look back, there wasn't one event that I can pinpoint that it kind of started me on my journey of these traumas. It was these little traumas that built upon each other. So it would be one little thing, like, and then it would be another little thing. And at the time, they seemed very insignificant. You're like, well, it's not a big deal. And I hear people say all the time, it's not a big deal, or this is just life, and life is tough, and all these things they just said. But it kept building up, and I think that's really important. That, like what you're saying, like you don't, it's just this accumulation, and then they tell you that if you do go back and start looking at these traumas, that you're gonna be, it's gonna make it worse. It's gonna bring up old memories. It's gonna do all this negative. But it's really the opposite. I think you have to. For me, I had to go and go right at them and address them.
Yeah, the healing comes through. To get out, you need to go through. And that means through the buried, occulted emotions and experiences of your life. And there's ways that are helpful and ways that can re-traumatize you too. So it is true that if you are had an event and you're actively feeling traumatized, and when you start to talk about it, it activates you physiologically and you're going into fight or flight. And that's not good to just go over and over events from that state of dysregulation. That deepens the traumatic hold, right? And so there's a process to build your capacity to be with the difficult emotions while staying in a somewhat grounded, aware state where your left hemisphere, your sense of witness is there to be present and see it from a little bit of disconnection, a little bit of detachment. Because otherwise we just blend and merge with the fear, with the hurt. And it's like that's a symptom. You know, that's a symptom of an intrusive memory, a flashback state. And when we're in this state, all blended and dysregulated, that's not going to heal anything. So it's not a great idea to kind of over and over tell a trauma story and get upset about it every time.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that makes a lot. Yeah, I get what you're saying, because I think that's important that you say that to people, that you brought this up, Leslie, because I mean, there's a way to go about it. I think you just don't want to, like you said, just keep reeling. Because I could see how, if you haven't, that's the question I come to, because if you have had this major trauma, and I'm thinking of something that's major, event, I think, like, does it, I'm trying to word this right, my thoughts, just give me a second. So if you have a major trauma, what I'm wondering is that if you go back to revisit it, would it not always bring up, like, you have to go through that heightened emotion because you're going back to it? Like, that's part of the process, but then you don't want to keep going over it, I guess is what you're saying.
Right. Yes. So there is going to be a process of facing the, what do you fear, right? And feeling the emotion and facing the traumatization. And yet we have to build a capacity to be able to sustain our presence and our ability to witness what's happening, or else it's not going to help. Otherwise, our defenses are going to take over. We're going to go in the freeze response or the fight or flight response, and that's not going to take us to the healing path.
Okay.
So it's really important to develop some skills up front and some, I think knowledge, right, mm-hmm. about how the nervous system works and about what trauma's done is, you know, interacting in your life, to have knowledge so that when things are happening, that you're informed enough to kind of say, oh, I'm getting really triggered. It's time now for me to do some self-soothing.
That makes a little, okay, right?
Going back to the infant, we're the infant out of, you know, does not know how to self-soothe. No infant comes out of their mother's body with the ability to soothe themselves emotionally. That is where we are dependent on our caregiver to soothe us. There is a very distinct interrelationship and interdependency there, where the mother or whoever is that primary caregiver for that mm-hmm. child is attuning to the infant, seeing the infant's expressions and needs, right? Mm-hmm. And then responding to meet the need to create a sense of safety emotionally and in the baby's body. The safety is felt in the body. So, you know, baby's upset, they're hungry, they're cold, they're crying, they're shaking, they're making funny faces, the caregiver sees us, they figure out, you know, either they can tell right away or they, through trial and error, figure out what that baby needs, and they wrap that baby up and make him warm, and they hold that baby, and they use a soothing voice to let that baby know that he's okay, and they feed the baby, right? And then the baby's getting a physiological correct, you know, a mm-hmm. remedy to the discomfort by their bodies being soothed. And they're like, the world is safe, right? And yep. over and over, yep. a million times this happens in our childhood, in our, you know, where there's a need for mother's or father's attunement and them to take an action that is providing a sense of safety and soothing. And that creates the foundation of a solid attachment. Which is a relational experience of having a sense of reliability with another human being, and when that happens consistently, and of course no parent's going to be 100% perfect,
exactly,
but then you create a repair, right? You mess up, oh, do you think they're hungry, but no, they're really, you know, have a wet diaper, right? Mm-hmm. So you repair when you make a mistake, and that carries true in all our relationships up to adulthood. How well can we, you know, hang with our needs not being met and hang and keep communicating and allowing the repair to happen.
Right. I'm just really thinking about what you're saying, because it's so crucial in this early years, and it's something I've learned. The more I learn about this, and it really interests me, because I think that this is the foundation that people are missing. I think that parents have to really get educated on this. I think because the way the world is, it's so quick paced and people are going a mile a minute now, and we can have a whole discussion on it. Is that by design? I absolutely believe it is. I think that they're doing their best to destroy the mm-hmm. whole family structure. Even relationships mm-hmm. now are being destroyed. I see it. I just think back to how crucial this point is. And then, you know, how quick the world is, this really important bond. This is probably the most important bond that you're going to form, because it's so young. It's your initial bond.
Yeah.
And if that is not taken, if that isn't nurtured properly, I can see how this is going to start echoing. And as I said, build as you get older. And I just think, so maybe we could talk about how important it is for parents to learn this.
I just validate and just sort of jump off this point you're making, because I think it's really important and really insightful that there is apparent agenda, you know, to destroy those things that create security in people, that create security in relationships, or that even create security in how a child experiences their and develops their sense of identity and finds out who, you know, develops into their true self, right?
Yeah.
So we are in a climate in the world where what's kind of normal is actually quite unhealthy.
Agreed.
And we take it for granted as normal and just think we gotta stay up with this pace, and you know, these experts must be right or whatever. The school teachers must know what they're doing, and we have to trust, you know, the school system or the doctors or, you know, whatever it is. And unfortunately, the more I'm learning, the more I'm realizing that it's the opposite. And the wisdom is actually within us. One, if we can kind of clear out all the clutter and the destruction, you know, and heal, because our bodies and Earth itself is pretty, has a self-healing impetus. Right. It has an energy, a drive for growth and wholeness and healing. And a lot of, you know, for example, like some, like EMDR is a modality. It's really about that. It's like, let's get out of our own way to allow our system to do some healing naturally. So right. I'm kind of meandering, but I wanted to say
this
there's
amazing.
Part when I kind of ended my presentation with this slide about we need to get back to home and hearth. And it's becoming apparent to me that this attack on our ability to establish deep roots to a place, to a home, to a community, right? To a tribe is destructive to our mental health, and it is traumatizing to, you know, to take away children from their parents, to separate families, to provide an unstable financial climate where you can't afford to stay in your home, right? Or all these different ways that we're under attack. And there's also something that was a big insight for me. You remember back Hillary Clinton?
Mm-hmm.
She wrote a book, It Takes a Village to Raise a Child.
Yes.
Right. Yep. This is back before I had these awarenesses and kind of before the awakening to the evils of the government system and these people in charge. And I thought that was a great idea, because in a way it is. It does, in a sense, take a village or a tribe to create the most secure climate for a child to thrive in. To have your aunties and your grandma and your neighbor and your mom and your dad and your uncles and your brother and your cousins. When we go back into this, what are the strengths of cultures or even going back to our early pagan roots, it was based on that interconnection and interdependency. And that provided, I think, a deep sense of belonging and importance and purpose. And all of that has been attacked. And now, people move across the country, they move from place to place, you know, there's so much disconnection. And I think that what Hillary Clinton, in this inversion of this truth, what was the agenda that was being pushed, and I remember it from my like social work life, is the big push on the on preschools and daycares and training. You know, saying that the best thing for your child is to go to, you know, this Head Start program or this therapeutic, this not even a therapeutic, but a preschool, a state preschool, You know, they need to get this early start. And there was almost an insulting lack of respect for parents, as if it's bad for kids to be with their own parents, that they need to go to these places to be properly raised, you know, for their development.
Yeah, you're right.
And that there's so, you know, and I think that was part of the hijacking, was promoting like this climate of sending your kids somewhere else to be raised by trained people of some sort, while the parents are off, you know, focusing on a career and the general foundation of a family system and a home, a household security, has really been fractured.
Absolutely.
Yeah, right.
More. Yeah. And you're so right. Let's have thinking about that. And that's exactly what that, what we're talking about. What she did was invert it, because we were kind of talking earlier about, you know, it does, you know, take it back in the day, the whole tribe or the whole village kind of took part in the raising of children. It was, but they've inverted it. Like you said it perfect. They inverted it. And I think at a spiritual and a very instinctual level, we know deep down that this is the way that we should be raising our children. I truly believe it down deep, you know, maybe buried down there, but we know at a spiritual level, but they invert it. So then instead of saying, well, let's keep the family together. No, bring them to the indoctrination camps.
Yeah.
Let's start them over there. And then it resonates in a way like, it takes a village.
And it's also fragmenting that child's experience by fragmenting their daily routine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whisking them away. And I mean, I've been a single mom, and I know I was part of this, of, you know, having to work outside of the home, right? You know, to make money to pay my bills, and relying on preschools and after school programs and school system. And then you're whisking your kids from place to place in a hurry, usually out the door in the morning, take them to this place where the staff doesn't stay consistent. There's usually quite a bit of turnover. You can't predict. You don't know their level of training or attunement abilities, their own traumas and what they're bringing to your child. There's a big trend right now in early education to make it all about academics, totally bypassing the social emotional needs of children for preschool and kindergarten. All of a sudden, there's like this false pressure on them learning all their ABCs and it's all out of attunement with the child. This whole school system from the start is out of attunement with the child. And this has lasting effects. Now, it's very good when you want a soldier who can disconnect from their emotions and their empathy, you know, and can follow orders. But it's not good when you want a person to really learn self-knowledge and be empowered and confident and free and value their own freedom in the world.
That's a great point.
Wow. So there's these accumulative injuries that we experience with these incessant stressors in the modern world, you know, and we're exposed to so many toxins, both emotionally and physically. And these all accumulate, especially the pace of life. That's another point that
it's crazy,
right? Like we're in such a fast paced world that it's, if we're on the ride of moving at the pace of the modern life, there's literally not enough time to process your your own emotion, your own life.
Yep. I totally agree.
Yeah. People run from their work to their social life, to their extracurricular activities.
Yep.
Very little time that people spend just even pausing throughout your day to check in, like, how am I doing? What am I feeling? What does my body need right now? You know, we don't even pay attention to when we have to go pee. We usually ignore it and put wait until it's convenient, right? Yes,
that is, you're not lying there.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that parallels to the emotional needs and the even just the feedback. It's like our body is born. We're born with a body to naturally give us feedback. And we want to be attuned to that feedback. But if we're shutting it down, which is what these stressors, chronic stressors and traumas do, we're shutting down our ears, basically, mm-hmm. to our body wisdom and our deepest intelligence.
That makes a lot of sense.
Body,
yeah.
Spirit. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think you make such great points. I'm just really, as you're talking and explaining, I'm thinking about just, I think I go back in my life and I think of what you're speaking about, and you're so right that, and I've done a lot of shows on this because I think it's so important that these early years of a child, and I think it's in even for the parent, it's so important. And you make a great point because you think, you see, like I see, people around me that have children, and they maybe spend at best an hour in the morning, and it's not mm-hmm. quality time. It's like, here's your breakfast. I'm getting ready. Get ready for school. Let's go. We got to go. And then in the car. And like you said, then they're in
get
the school.
Get out of bed.
Yeah. Get out of bed. And then, you know, they're gone all day. So they're not getting any really quality time with their parents. The parents aren't getting any quality time with their children. Then you come home, everybody's exhausted. So you kind of make a dinner and you have dinner and then it's to bed. You might have maybe an hour or two at best.
Yeah.
Kind of interacting, and then it's all over again. And you make such great points that you're missing out on this. Really, it's so crucial. And I was fortunate, Leslie. I had a stay at home mom that was with me till I got into high school. She wanted to be really active with me, and my dad was out working, and there was abandonment issues. Even though I understand now, my dad was out doing this. You know, he's doing what he had to do to keep food on the table. And
me too.
But there was still a bit of trauma there, that there was some abandonment issues I still had, even though I understood
what was going on. And the things that your parent, like your dad was doing, and my dad too, were based on survival, right? Mm-hmm. My dad was born in the Great Depression.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that environment had some impact on him around money and
absolutely.
Work and anxiety. And, you know, it's great work ethics, stand-up people. My mom was a social worker. My dad was hardworking man, and both of them were. But, there are impacts, whether we want to admit it or not, whether it's popular or not, there are impacts to parents being gone from their children for so many hours. And then when they're with them, it's very almost kind of on autopilot around, hurry up, I got to make dinner. You know, I got to eat. You got to do your homework. Got to get to bed by this time. You know, oh, we got to run you to play baseball or some extracurricular because that's what a good parent does. You got to sign you up for a rounded sports and mm-hmm. whatever, you know, all well-meaning. And yet I really think that these kids out there are just emotionally untethered in a lot of ways, you know, ungrounded, and there's not like a solid foundation of even value on like understanding our psycho-emotional experience and valuing like even their own feelings and wants and needs. They don't matter as much as the clock that, you know, what the clock says.
Exactly.
Or what, you know, based on what time mom has to go to work or, you know, there's school starts, you know.
Yeah.
We're not doing kids a good service by just plugging them into external systems to tell them what to do.
Yeah.
How does a person develop trust in themselves, in their own judgment? I mean, we're in a day and age right now where AI is infiltrating everything.
That's
we can
true.
Look at something. We don't know if it's real or not. How are we going to discern? Most people that I work with, they have no idea what they're scared of making decisions. I was even a person in much of my life where like I was pretty much a people pleaser. So I was with somebody that asked me where I want to go eat. Well, I don't care, whatever you want. Always mm-hmm. deferring, always deferring. It was a habit. Right. I often didn't even bother to look inside and really ask myself, what do I want? You know, what is my body needing right now? And I think a lot of people are in that habit. So this is about reclaiming ourselves reclaiming attunement or finding for the first time of our lives real attunement to ourselves, and not from the scripts that say, buck up, be tough. You know, I had to walk uphill 10 miles in the snow. You know?
I heard that too.
Right, or whatever.
With one boot.
Yeah, right. You know, all this. That's our working class family. That comes from there, our generational trauma.
Yep.
That's programming from parents who've been through wars, or their parents' parents have been through wars, and, you know, or they've been through the Depression, or, you know, adapting and trying to survive in life.
So there's like a survival mode. And I've heard that same story. A lot of the people I talk to, I'm like, did your parents walk to school uphill both ways in 10 feet of snow with one boot? And they're like, oh, yeah, I heard that same story. I'm like, okay, something's going on here.
And you understand, like, why a parent, we want our kids to be tough. We want them to go out in the world and not be crushed,
right.
You know? And that's under, really, we, you know, it seems important. However, wouldn't it be really amazing if we could say, hey, wait a minute, you know, this lifestyle that's kind of been imposed on us, that we're just sort of born into, is not a helpful lifestyle for human beings. Yeah. It is counter to the potential of humans to thrive in the world and to become, and for an individual to become their most best self, they have to reach their highest potential. Yeah. You know, I think that there's possibility by using our imagination to refigure our lives in a way that is conducive to emotional and mental health and thriving, if we can use our imagination. But you know what trauma does to imagination, Rick?
It crushes it.
It destroys it. It removes it. It removes a lot of the lighter energies of play and joy and fun. You know, how many kids, their imaginary play, how often is that promoted, do you think, in their childhood?
I don't think it's very, I know it, not very often, but I do remember in my childhood, there was a big part of, I still remember how powerful my imagination was. And I actually had a discussion with my neighbor about this, and he shocked me actually, because he brought it up. He's like, do you remember when you were a kid how powerful and everything seemed possible when you were young? Like if you were playing, like, you know, cops and robbers or something, whatever role you took on, whether it was that or an astronaut or a doctor, you believed it in the time that you were imagining it. Like it was so powerful. And then I thought about that. I'm like, yeah, like when I had my imagination when I was really young, it was really in tune and it was normal and it was powerful. And then over the years, they drilled that out of you. As soon as I got into the schooling system, as I went on, they you're right, they shattered that.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I was lucky too to have that life of I was allowed to be outside and just explore all, you know, many, many hours of my day or reading books, right? You know, mm-hmm. getting lost in stories. Those are things where we are being called to use our imagination actively. You read a book, you know, picture books have pictures, but it's different than being like plopped in front of a movie.
Right.
Because there's a aspect of creation within ourselves when we're doing imaginary play, or we're reading words and then we're creating pictures in our head and we're going off to distant lands. It's a different type of experience than when someone else's imagination and their creation is being imposed on us with all of our senses, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. I totally agree. And the discussions I've had too about schooling, and I know that we're kind of like laboring in this area, but I think I just think it's that important. And I'm glad that you were discussing it, because to me, I've always had the argument that that it's such an unnatural way for a child to be raised. I really, and I can speak also for myself in this area that, you know, you go into the schooling system and all these kids, you're put in the class with all these other children. You're expected to learn at the same pace. You're expect, you know, the way they teach classes is so unnatural, like an hour for history. Then we jump to math. Then we go to science. Then we go to religion. And I was just like, whoa, like it was just bombardment. Yeah. And it was so unnatural. It's such an unnatural way for me to learn. I think most people are just like, I wish that imagine if you spent time pursuing things that made you happy and creative and wow.
And where that relates to the trauma is about attunement and validating the child for who he or she is. Right? So if a child has a natural interest in building things, is that encouraged? Is that promoted? Or is it shut down and told, no, you need to learn about computers? I don't, you know, if a parent has an agenda, for example, you shouldn't be a laborer, you should be a white class, you know, like college educated, you know, computer, whatever, technological person, then you're denying that child's who they are, really, and thwarting their own natural growth and curiosity and development. So that, I would say, is traumatic.
I agree.
If you are being cut off from what you are most excited to become. You know, and these are the subtle things that are in our culture that aren't seen as trauma. They're seen as, this is just the way life is, which it unfortunately is, because we live in an aspect of a slave system. We are not free.
Yeah, that's so true.
Different degrees of our own captive, how we're held captive.
Right. Mentally, especially. In every aspect, actually.
And in our routines, right? Yeah. You know, if I want to, even still, you know, if I want to pay my rent, I have to work, a certain way that I love my work. And yet I'm aware that as I'm sitting in a chair for how many ever hours a day, that is not what my true need is. I need to move, right? My body is telling me, get up and move, but I have to thwart my energy. I have to ignore it. I have to put it down in order to make a paycheck.
Yeah.
Wow. Now in the ideal world, it's good to think about the ideal, right? What would it be? It would be an environment where I have more control over the pacing of my life.
That's where I'm so true.
Allow myself opportunities to listen to my body. And if my body needs to go for a walk, I go for the walk. If I need to eat, I eat. If I need to just close my eyes and sit and breathe, whatever my body's needing, if I can respond to that, I'm going to function optimally. But instead,
wow, that's so true. I just got to cut you off, Leslie. Hold that thought. We are at the top of the hour, guys. Leslie Powers, amazing conversation. We're diving into trauma, guys. We will be back in 5 minutes, so stick around. We will be back for hour two.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
You're going back in?
There's still men out there. God damn. When I go home, people ask me, hey, Hoot, why do you do it, man? Why? Some kind of war junkie? I won't say a goddamn word. Why? They won't understand. They won't understand why we do it. You want to understand, it's about the men next to you. And that's it. That's all it is.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. Number one listener supported radio. The printing press for freedom at a time when freedom is needed the most.
I am Bill Johnson. Some consider my efforts to be an underground law school. I am not an attorney, and I do not give legal advice. I teach. That's lawful and legal. Consider yourself served. You are to appear Wednesday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern, Studio A. My forte? Foreclosure and contract law. Grab your legal pad and pen. Learn a broad spectrum of law spanning administrative, criminal, family, tort, and federal law. Fools and losers cling to old cases. I dissect and comment on the latest rulings that control the courts. Don't be a loser. And if you don't appear, you will be held in contempt.
I will defend myself against their tyranny. Number three is my radio broadcast. I'm squarely in front of the public all the time, and they all know what's going on.
For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence.
Hello, my name is John Wayne, and I do a broadcast here at freedomslips.com, revolution.radio, called The Unequivocal Truth, DEFCON 1.
Freedom and fear are at war.
And folks, I assure you, we are in defense condition 1. As we journey perilously through this paradigm that we currently reside in, and I ask that you join me every Saturday, 8 to 10 p.m., Eastern Standard Time, for the unequivocal truth, DEFCON 1.
We shall never surrender.
The original machine had a base plate of pre-famulated amulite surmounted by a malleable logarithmic casing in such a way that the two spurving bearings were in a direct line with a panometric fan. The lineup consisted simply of six hydrocoptic Marzal vanes, so fitted to the ambifacient lunar wane shaft that side fumbling was effectively prevented. The main winding was of the normal lotus o-deltoid type placed in panendermic semi-boloid slots of the stator, every seventh conductor being connected by a non-reversible tremie pipe to the differential girdle spring on the up end of the grand meters.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio, taking the confusion out of transmutated lunar girdle springs for 4 years and running. Revolution Radio, the number one listener-supported alternative media radio on the planet.
All right, thanks for listening while we take that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Welcome back, everybody. We are here already. Our two amazing guests, Leslie Powers. We are talking about trauma. We're talking about the effects of it, how it accumulates. We're covering so much important stuff here. And I hope you guys are really listening and enjoying this and really taking this in. Because I really, as I said earlier in the first hour, I think this is such an important discussion to have. Because I truly believe, and I know, that we all have traumas in. Like I said, we're either dealing with them and we're aware of them, or we're pushing them down and we're not dealing with them. And they are going to manifest in some form or another. And they will rear their head usually at the worst possible time is when I've noticed, is when they will come and make their appearance. And I just think this is so key. And it really does, as we were speaking about Leslie and I at the beginning, I really truly believe it starts so young. And I think of the world, Leslie, the way it is now. As we were saying, it's changing so fast. Everybody's moving so quick. I can't even imagine. I didn't have internet when I was growing up as a child. So thank God, I say, to be honest. I mean, it was tough enough. I can't even imagine now with this technical side of things, how much even more stress it's put on children, and then how that starts to traumatize them in certain ways growing up. So we're covering important stuff here, Leslie, that's for sure. Oh, Leslie is not with us right now. That's cool. You got me, guys.
I was talking. So sorry. I forgot to unmute myself.
There you are.
I was worried I was speaking over you.
No, you're doing great. But
I think you're I'll just make a comment on the technology piece. Think that what it serves a lot to do is create such a distraction and besides the programming that it does. Okay, clearly there's programming in there, but it's also putting a child's attention outside of themselves again, rather than learning how to attune inward. And it's also empowering that that imaginary play, creating from within oneself. So there is really importance that there, I think, some limits, you know, making sure that kids aren't on internet all the time.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, it can lead to that shutting down of our emotional messages. I mean, I've heard stories of people playing, like kids playing video games for not sleeping and peeing in bottles because they don't want to get up, you know, and leave, wow. You know, and it's just so disconnected from their bodies. And so over time, what happens? What are the effects, especially into adulthood, when we've continued to have survival stresses ongoing? Is it has health effects. So the toxic stress becomes very insidious and sets up our biology for problems. You know,
that makes a lot of sense.
Lifestyle related diseases, from, you know, heart disease, hypertension, tons of gut problems, which are directly related to stress and trauma in the nervous system, fibromyalgia, right? All sorts of, you know, health conditions are very directly related, if not all of them, to this psycho-emotional state.
Wow. Yeah, I just keep thinking about how fast our world moves and changes so quickly, and people are struggling to keep up. I mean, and you're right. I don't see people taking time to get to know themselves at all. I really believe people don't know who they, a lot of people, I don't want a blanket statement, say nobody does, but I think a lot of people are not in, as you're saying, in tune with themselves, and they don't even know who they truly are. Yeah. It's this weird state we're in.
Are you even choosing how you spend your time? Honestly, how much of your day are you actually choosing to do
what
you
do? That's
a big
one, yeah.
You know, how has our time been hijacked? What are the systems that hijack it? How much, you know, are we basing our actions on money-based decisions, right, as Chris talks about? And I think the survival stressors, this, you know, that you were talking about, like every day, right, creates, I think, like a shield or a barrier between ourselves and our inner world and our inner attunement. It overshadows like early traumas because we don't have the time or the energy to actually address them. We've disconnected from the source of those traumas, and we are kind of all scattered and chaotic in our current, you know, relationship with the world,
right.
In a sense. You know, I think that there's, in order to really address the deeper stuff, we need to take charge of our present lifestyle and the time that we're spending. We have to make the time to slow down the pace so that we can attune and listen to what needs to be healed.
And I totally agree with what you're saying, Leslie. I think that was key for me, was getting, I know it was key for me to get to know who I was. At one time, I didn't know who I truly was. I had to go back. I really did. It's taking time. It's not quick. It's not like a weekend thing or you do it for a couple of days. I've really had to go really far back, as far as I possibly could, and really start going through it slowly and addressing each thing. And I just think, and I can hear people, hear people that are listening going, great. So how do I slow down? My life is so quick. How do you propose that? And I'm not saying it's an easy
question.
It is. Yeah. How do you do that?
Right. I mean, there's layers to this answer. And so the first layer is, okay, within the structure of our life that we feel like we're kind of stuck in a way, like that we may not see that we have many choices to work less or change our responsibilities, right? So as a mother, single parent, or a single father, or even partners and raising children, also working, you know, you can't just like say, oops, I had too many kids, I think I need to rewind, you know, or, you know, I bought this house and I guess I'm just going to have to give it up. You know, we obviously, I'm not saying that.
Right.
Although I do want you to sit with the discomfort of this dissonance, the dissonance that's created by what you have gotten yourself into in terms of your lifestyle, mm-hmm. and your actual, I guess, natural needs for pacing. And, you know, I don't think it's doing anyone a favor for everyone to be on running on high all the time. And that's why people run out of energy and they drink energy drinks and they, you know, are giving themselves false external remedies to try to regulate something that's out of balance. We do that in so many ways.
Yeah.
So look at your lifestyle and just see, how are you spending your free time? You know, how are you running from uncomfortable emotions or feelings? Are you distracting yourself with TV, with, you know, going out to do some nightlife? Are you going on vacations to, you know, how do you spend your vacations? I mean, I honestly think that everybody needs a staycation or a vacation kind of where you maybe don't have a lot of, a vacation in nature, basically.
Yeah.
You know, is probably the most healing, where you can not just focus on doing activities, but maybe spending some time really doing some inward, looking inward and doing some journaling and getting to know yourself and, you know, in a more honest way.
I agree with that 100%. We were just talking about all the distractions that are put before us, and they're endless. I mean, if you want to distract yourself, how people can walk around at any point saying they're bored anymore, I'm just like, I don't get it, because there's so many ways to distract yourself that boredom, I think, is maybe, I don't know, maybe people can, but I'm never bored anymore. But
I think it's good to almost set your life up to that point where you start to feel bored, because at that point is where you then create. That's where the opening comes, you know. And when we're constantly busy, we're bypassing something.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
you're not looking inward, right? And mm-hmm. for me, the biggest change was going inward. I had to, like, I was covering symptoms. I know I was. That's why I was drinking and the things and doing other things. There was, and it doesn't always have to be like an addiction. I don't want people to think that either. There's other ways to deal with. You see, like you were bringing up, people might have an eating disorder. They might not be sleeping. The symptoms manifest in endless ways is what I've discovered, which was really shocking in your presentation. I was like, wow, like it just comes in so many different ways. And then what do? People medicate themselves. They
get pharmaceutical medication. Yeah. There's a high number of people who are on antidepressants, very high number of people.
Extremely
and they're,
high.
They're given out pretty easily without really being given the education about the cause and source of those symptoms. That's more important. Of a Band-Aid, you know, approach. And even like an antidepressant, most of the SSRIs and others, they kind of numb you, in a sense, to some of the emotion.
Which is so key, over time, you know. Like, how do you even address something if you, like, you're so numb you don't even... I don't understand. I think about this a lot. I'm like, how? No wonder we're in the shape that we're in, and nobody's really dealing with anything, because they're all numbed. We're all numb.
Yeah, running from our regrets.
Yeah. Oh, that's a big one.
From our shame, right? And the deeper we get, the deeper the hole we create in our lives, and you know, we do and say things that we regret and feel bad, and a lot of people are not really facing those things, and then they accumulate to make it even harder. Addiction really is part of that. Yeah, and I would say, okay, so for an average person, working person, outside the home, busy life, taking care of your kids in the home, whatever it is, develop some sort of daily ritual or routine in your life where you are checking in with yourself. So that could look like waking up and doing some mindfulness practices, maybe meditation, maybe a walk where you're really kind of not distracting yourself with music or podcasts and other things, but just being present with yourself and noticing what shows up and noticing if some of it is uncomfortable or nagging. You know, a lot of people, they are so busy in the day pushing all that aside that then they have trouble sleeping because their system is like, oh, we have a lot of unresolved issues. We got to wake you up at 3 a.m. and, you know, have you worrying about all the things you haven't done, you know?
Yeah.
So, and then what do people, they look for sleep medications or other things that are just suppression, avoiding. And unfortunately, the answer is go through the experience facing it. Now, some people with very severe post-traumatic stress, you know, effects mm-hmm. will can decompensate and go into fight or flight and flashback from stilling themselves too much, right?
Okay.
So going into meditation, for example, like a traditional sitting meditation where you're just closing your eyes, that could be terrifying and that could overwhelm and flood a person who has PTSD and they're like, oh, I can't do that. That's too much, right? That's where you're learning where are you at in
your
own
boundaries.
Trauma.
Right.
Where are you at in your trauma effects?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are your symptoms? How well can you, do you have the capacity to sit with the discomfort? Some traumas are so insidious and so extreme that just starting to look at it sets someone off physiologically, you know, into fight or flight and or disassociation. And so that's where a therapist, you know, or a good helping person could, who's educated, can help, you know, a person to get through that and be able to get to the place where they can tolerate those feelings without.
That's a great point that you brought up, Leslie, that maybe sometimes there's no shame. And if you have to go talk to somebody like a professional to help you, I mean, that's another one that I know in my family, that was a big one. Like, you know, it was like, oh, you know, those people aren't really helping and they don't know what they're talking about. You don't need to go see anybody, just figure it out. And I love that you're saying that, like maybe there's no shame if it's bothering you, that if it's that big of a trauma for you, you may need some guidance. And your body will tell you that. The reaction that you have will tell you that I'm taking. Yeah.
And I think what's happening in our culture today is people are manifesting their trauma in medical and health conditions, you know, in great part because of that conditioning, that generational shame, the messaging of, you know, don't go to a therapist. They'll think you're crazy. You're not crazy. You know, there's mm-hmm. stigma around asking for help around, you know, your emotional, mental challenges in life. And that is part of, I think, the programming as well, right? That you have to just, you know, handle it. And also I did reference a couple of studies in my recent release from trauma presentation. Yep. About Holocaust survivors, and there was another study of a previous, many years ago, cultural trauma in Ukraine, where they studied the effects on parenting and intergenerational effects of traumatic events. And it basically shows that the messaging of it's not safe to ask for help and it's not safe to trust are very are those things that get passed on. And so we have probably generations, and I can say that's probably true in my family, where it wouldn't have been encouraged to go to a therapist or counselor or admit to certain symptoms. You know, it was valued to be tough and stoic, not cry, you know.
That's a big one, especially for men. I mean, wow. oh my God, if you cry, you're a wimp, and if you cry, you're weak. And
I
have a complete opposite feeling about that now. And surprisingly, a lot of the guys I talk to, they feel the same way. Like, they're like, I think you should be able to cry. Like, I think that's a totally natural emotion. It's not weak.
Even for me, I have a memory. Like, my grandmother on my father's side was from Sweden. And I've seen pictures of that the family, and they're like some really tough women, very tough farm, outdoor. You can see the lines on their face. There's no smile. Their facial expressions are flat. They're almost like look angry or pained almost, and they're just like hardworking people, right? And then my grandma, also hardworking woman, she lost a baby in like toddlerhood. And she had developed Parkinson's, and she was like this very brave woman. And my father, I remember when my grandma was in the hospital, and I went with my father to visit her, and my grandmother cried, was tearful, and she cried. She wanted to leave the hospital. She was afraid. And my father got really triggered by seeing his own mother cry.
Right.
And I remember standing with my dad on the steps outside the hospital, and he was really shook up, and he was crying, and he was saying, I know my mom is suffering because she's crying. My mom doesn't cry. And I remember, I think, what was the impact of me on me as a girl? You know, like to be with women, including my own mom, who were like very stoic, hardworking women, tense work ethics, endured a lot without complaint, right? Always stepped up to do the job that they were called to do. And how over generations, you know, then as children, we learn to be tough. We learn not to honor, you know, to see our emotions as important or priorities, the value on being stoic, right, and being hard. I think that many of our, you know, families have taught us those things. And unfortunately, it's keeping the trauma in our systems through generation after generation. Right. We repeat it.
That makes sense. And I've learned, you make great points, Leslie, and I do believe that. I look at all of our emotions, there's a reason we have them. And I tell people that. I'm like, we have them for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
They're like our radar. They're our early warning system. And I look at crying as, to me, a good cry is healing. I don't know about anyone else. And I'm man enough to admit that. If I have a good cry, I feel amazing afterwards.
Yeah.
It's a release valve. It's something. It's needed.
There's physiological changes.
Absolutely.
In the act of crying, you know, where we're releasing certain, you know, chemicals in our body and rebalancing and bringing us back to a homeostasis and hopefully back to a state of safety in our body. And that's the goal, is that we have a felt sense of safety that our body agrees with, not just intellectually, but our body needs to agree. So sometimes we can be like intellectually, well, I know this is okay, I'm safe, but our body's telling us we're not. What's that about?
That's a good question. Right? Yeah.
And how do we look at that? That's telling us something. Like we're incongruent. And so going deeper into exploring those things, you know, a lot of people find this to be scary, aversive, maybe don't see the point. I'm trying to highlight why it is important, because
exactly.
If you don't, then you end up maybe with, you know, diabetes, or you end up with arthritis, or you get a gut problem and you get depressed. You know, there's consequences.
Absolutely.
This is where the first law, well, I mean, not the first law, but all the hermetic principles are at play here, right?
Mm-hmm.
And cause and effect is at play here. If you treat your body and your mind and your emotions a certain way, there's going to be an effect.
100%.
Lots of effects.
Mm-hmm.
And the vibration of our is related to emotion. Emotions are vibration. And so we can learn about that. We can learn about rhythms in our life and that time, how our relationship to time is related to honoring natural rhythms.
Yeah, which we're all out of, a lot of people are out of sync with that. Wow.
Because we have an overlay going on. It's an overlay. It's like, it's a false schedule, I guess, put on our lives that is totally disconnected from our actual origins and our physiological normalcy, right? Mm-hmm. What's really natural and healthy and normal if we are not interfered with, right?
There's That's a great way to put it. We're interfered in so many ways, Leslie. Yeah. I think about that all the time, and I think about when have I noticed the most healing occurs for me? And I'm thinking, I really want to be, I'm very aware. I try to be very aware of everything now in my body and around me, and even the conversations I have with people. Like if people have no idea that any conversation I've had with you, yes, you, I've thought about it afterwards, no matter how big or small the conversation, I analyze it. And I learn that by analyzing me internally and what I'm feeling. And I still work at it every day. It's like I said, it's not a one and done. This is ongoing. And I'm continuously doing it in the best ways I can that work for me. And I think the most healing I've ever done is those quiet times where I'm alone with myself. And I'm definitely, for me, I'm out in my garden or something. I'm out in nature. Yeah. I'm out doing something that very relaxing. And this is when, for me, is when the healing occurs. I need to take that time to focus in, and it's not selfish. I've heard people say that actually to me, like, that sounds very selfish that you're just sitting there thinking about yourself. And I'm like, what mind control is going on here where people think that?
Yeah. That's the opposite of
it's
what's
crazy.
So I'll share this related more to this time thing.
Okay.
So part of the healing is learning to be in the present moment, in that mindful presence, in our awareness as a witness to ourselves in relationship to our environment, right?
Mm-hmm.
And but when what trauma does and prolonged stress, which traumatizes us, what that does, it affects our relationship to time. So here's a couple quotes by Bessel van der Kolk, one of the most renowned trauma experts on the planet. He wrote the book, The Body Keeps the Score. He says, being traumatized means continuing to organize your life as if the trauma were still going on, unchanged and immutable, as every new encounter or event is contaminated by the past. And he says, being traumatized is not just an issue of being stuck in the past. It is just as much a problem of not being fully alive in the present.
That's so powerful.
Yeah. Yeah. I think big picture. I mean, you can think of it, again, the principle of correspondence. How does this apply to your immediate life, to your own life? How are you organizing your life based on your past experiences? Maybe you've had heartaches and disappointments, and you've gotten burned from taking chances. And so those had an impact on your mind, body, spirit in such a way that it has you afraid to take chances again or to go have a new relationship or whatever it might be, right? Because the new encounter, the new event is contaminated by the past. There's a script that's been, you know, a template, a false script of saying you can't trust, or it's dangerous if I do something different. Right. Think about that generationally. Think about that in terms of this larger world arena that we're in. So we are, you and I, some other folks are providing education around natural law. We're saying some pretty triggering things, like government, you know, the government systems that we are living in are enslaving us, that they are. They are hurting us, that they're unethical, they're immoral, right? And we're encouraging people to use their imaginations to think about alternative ways of living their life and detaching from this system that's got their tentacles in our lives in a way they're sucking out our life force and limiting us, right? So, but when we bring this up, people immediately go into fear.
Yes.
And this fear, where does this come from? I think it has a lot to do with our generational fear of, you know, our ancestry
we've
brought on in this life, and then in those messages and the things your parents teach you about how to be a successful human, do good in school, go to college, go to get up on time, go to work, don't skip school, all these things, right, are based on experiences of the past. Sometimes not even our own. It could be the past of our grandmother.
That's what I was just going to say. It's like it's echoing. Who knows how far back it could be coming from. That's just getting passed on and passed on. And it's just like you said, it's this trauma being relived. But it could be so many generations back.
Yeah. How many of our families have gone through war times? You know, how many of our families have had to flee their homes to make a new home? I mean, this is how the whole United States was built.
Yeah.
Right? So from the trauma, we were built on the flight response of people fleeing oppression to create a new world, right, for their families with a dream. And we've essentially failed, I think, in many ways, even though, you know, people will say, oh, look, that if they're using money, right, as the measure,
which
mostly we do, we live a much more comfortable life, right? And almost if that's our biggest fault, it's like, okay, if I was Britain or whoever country that didn't want the United States to succeed, you know, like what things might you do to help create a culture that you can control? Well, let's get them really dependent on their comfort, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. You're right.
And then, you know, they're going to be so tied to it that they're not even going to realize how they've been duped. And by the time they do, they're in so deep, it's like really hard to get out. So I think that's the story of our history.
I really do. You're really touching on some great points, Leslie. I think it makes sense what you're saying, how it's passed on. And then it also comes back to when you were saying in the first hour that, you know, what are families missing now? And you brought up the root, like we don't have a good root, like a strong root foundation. Like we don't have roots anymore.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, and that really resonated with me too, because my own wife, she, as a young girl growing up, they moved around a lot.
Yeah.
And I've talked to her about this because my wife, she's a great woman, but she's still also kind of like closed in a little.
Yeah.
And getting much better at it. But and she always told me, like, I moved around a lot. It was very difficult for me she got traumatized. She couldn't make friends. And if she did, she would have to move a couple years later and break off contact with them.
Exactly. She didn't have any control over that. Her needs and relationships. I've thought about this very thing. How many times are kids' friendships minimized?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
Where they're just whisked away, taken away to a new school, a new home, a new country, wherever, a new city. And I don't think we are, as parents, are often attuned to the losses that the child experiences in their bonds and relationships with their friends. And
that's huge.
And, you know, kids have a natural drive to build their own community, to make friends. When they're not abused and over-controlled and put in fear and, you know, kids, they connect. I see it with my teenage daughter. They have their own drive to connect with each other and create their own tribe, which
makes
is
sense.
A really, I think, a beautiful thing. And
imagine if you just destroyed that. Like, you're like, we're moving. Then all of a sudden that whole world shatters.
Yeah. Like, and I think a lot of adults are afraid of groups. They're afraid of teenagers. You got to do your homework. That's more important than spending time with your friend. Oh, sorry, you can't talk to your friend this week because mm-hmm. you're grounded because your grades were poor. You know, I find that to be absolutely incongruent and not helpful for a child, honestly. Because
I never thought of this, actually. You got me thinking now.
I think there's a rampant underappreciation of relationships, friendships, community building, tribe. It's seen as like a luxury, or it's like not something that's vitally important to your emotional mental health and to your security, but it's like seen as a luxury or a privilege.
A privilege.
It's a privilege for our kids to have friends. Sorry.
Wow.
It's silly.
It really is, and I'm thinking about it. Kind of ties in, let's say, to what we're talking about, how there's this disconnect that is going through in the world. We brought it up, and it ties into perfect what we were talking about earlier. This disconnect of family and of community of relationships, and I see it more and more where even relationships are really starting to suffer. Yeah. And people are just kind of giving up. Like I've talked to people. They're like, I don't even want to date anymore. Like I'm done.
Okay.
And wow.
Yep. So let's go back to the trauma survivors have symptoms instead of memories.
Okay.
Numbing, overwhelm, a loss of a sense of like the future, a little hopelessness, giving up, right? Giving up, mistrust, feeling, a loss of self, who I am, because a lot of our identity is connected to our community, to our family, to our home, to our friends, kids especially, teenagers especially. Their identity is related to their peer group, right?
That's so true.
You know, so this giving up, this like just like wave the white flag to the possibility of change, that is an effect of trauma that is happening worldwide when it comes to these overtaking of our humanity by dark occultists who have an agenda to have us do their bidding and us do what they want so that they have what they want.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And
so true.
When we give up and we just say, well, I can't do anything about it. This is just the way it is. I didn't create this. I'm just doing what I'm told, right? All of that is a giving up, which is a result of the feeling of powerlessness, helplessness, being not important, confident in your own skills to know what you need or how to get out of your own messes, right?
It's all of it. And you're so right. I see so many people giving up. You said it perfect, Leslie. I that's what I feel from people a lot of the times. And I talk to people. I try to talk to people as much as I can in person because I get to know them and you start hearing things if you're aware of it. And it's just these little things that I hear. Like, you know, it's like, I was saying earlier, I don't want to be in a relationship. I'm done with that. Mm-hmm. You hear that a lot too. Like they're stuck. Like they just kind of rather wave the flag.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking like, that's such trauma what trauma's led up to this, like get them to that point where they think that they can't change anything or they're scared to, like they're scared to.
This is an important point, Rick. I'm really glad that you're like really seeing it. And sadly.
Yeah, it really is.
And yet it's like a trick. It's telling us we don't have the power. But really we do. But where do we find it? We find it within. And we can start with that inner work, know thyself, and start doing an inventory of the life events. Like sit down sometime and write from birth to present all of, you know, the stress, the highly stressful and traumatic experiences that you've had. You know, and this includes things like being in school and being the last pick kick, last kid.
That was me.
For this playing, being on dodgeball or being on the team or, you know, being overweight or something and being teased or developing your body, your body developing earlier than other girls and how you're treated and feel all sorts of things, including, you know, being harshly punished or severely punished or sexually molested, which is, you know, a good third of our population, probably. I wouldn't be surprised.
That's disturbing.
You know, and there's an emotional neglect, which is very insidious and not, you know, not even recognized because it's become normalized in this two-parent working, you know.
It's just normal, yeah.
Yeah.
It's sold as normal.
So I'll read another quote.
I would love to. Those last two were great.
Peter Levine, he's an expert in somatic processing. He has, this is a quote from him. The symptoms of trauma can be stable or ever present. They can also be unstable, meaning that they can come and go and be triggered by stress, or they can remain hidden for decades and suddenly surface. Usually symptoms do not occur individually, but come in groups. They often remain hidden for decades and suddenly surface. They often grow increasingly complex over time, becoming less and less connected with the original trauma experience. So the further that we get from the original severe, more severe traumas, and then the more that we're living in these sort of like stress states,
mm-hmm.
and developing this sort of overlay of other stressors, the further we get and these symptoms become more mysterious. They seem disconnected. They seem random, right? And then the medical system they treat them as random, you know, in a way. And yet they're not random. There is a whole line of cause and effects that has led you there. And so when we have this knowledge, we can start to look at our symptoms differently, and then our interventions will be different and we'll be much more compassionate and a lot less of a slave driver of ourselves.
Which most people are.
Yeah.
That's such great advice. And it may, I'm thinking, like you said, write these things down. Like that would, I think that would really help people, like, to get a kind of give you an idea of what you're dealing with, like an overhead view. You know, you write down all these little things, no matter how big or small, but these things that upset you. Yeah. And then maybe kind of do another timeline next to that. And maybe if you have symptoms, when you remember them showing up. I just wonder if that there's a correlation. I really believe there is a line that you're going to find that you're like, oh my God, like, my headache started showing up.
Yes, perfect. Yeah. Great idea. You know, and I mean, and this is the thing to balance out, right, is there's also resourcing of our strengths. And so my work is also very strengths-based.
Mm-hmm.
And so we all have strengths. And when we're doing our review of our life and our resiliencies, also make note of those and see how we've survived and how we've developed really positive qualities that that we can be really grateful for and that we can love about ourselves and we can enhance and we can also build others where we lack them.
That's really great advice. Wow. This is powerful, Leslie. It really is.
It's a lot of information.
It is.
And I think it's a little bit overloading in a way to share so much information. So, again, you find yourself going blank or overwhelmed with information.
Mm-hmm.
Take things in bite-sized pieces.
That's what I have to do.
Go back. Kind of review one part of one concept, look at it, how it is playing out in your own life or how it's true for you or not true for you, move on to the next, right?
Yeah.
So at your own capacity.
And take your time. For me, it's been a long process. I want to really emphasize that with anyone that's listening, that as I was saying earlier, it's not a one and done. It's something that I work on every day. So, I mean, I love that you said that, Leslie. Like, it's overwhelming. If I would have tried to do all of that in a weekend, I'd just short circuit and nothing would happen. So
it's impossible.
You can't, yeah. it's like you're dealing with years and years of like these traumas coming up. You're not gonna, it took years to build them up. It's going to take a while to get back and tear them down.
Yeah. But that doesn't mean you can't have relief or right. an increased quality of your life quickly. You couldn't start to see improvements in your life and how you feel by starting to do the work. However, that's not a quick fix, one and you're done. It's like a new lifestyle of maintaining of habits that you start to maintain to allow this process to occur. Now, for more acute traumas and targeted traumas, there are good therapies out there that can really clear them out, right, and take away the hyper reactivity. Mm-hmm. And flooding, things like EMDR is a really effective, for many kinds of traumas. Internal family systems is a good model for doing this kind of work. There's a holistic approaches are really the most effective, not just one thing. So somebody is like, I just need to go get EMDR. It could help, but it's rather narrow. So the way I work is very holistically and broadly and trying to pace at the speed of an individual and where they're at themselves. There's no real like formula that fits everybody.
Right. And that's great that you do that, Leslie, like, because everybody's so different. Right. So, I mean, you kind of tailor it to the person, which is, is so important, I think.
Yeah, there's consistencies in the physiology and the way that our systems work, because we're all human, and so we have this system that has certain rules of how it operates, and we want to learn those. We want to learn how our system operates, and physiologically and emotionally and mentally and how it all fits together. And as we learn, then we can be attuned to the early signals. Mm-hmm. And the intuitive messages, and we're going to be attuned to ourselves in a way that then we'll be able to catch stuff and deal with it as it comes, so it doesn't accumulate, right? And if we can clear out the heavy duty stuff from our past, and then we develop habits from the maintenance of all the stresses that we're going to just go through with living life day to day, right? Then we can keep ourselves pretty sharp. You know, you can keep your car, like your car.
Yeah, if you don't ever get
you don't maintain it, your car is going to not last as long.
Right. Yeah, and that's a great way to look at it. And I'm so thankful that you came on here. I really am, Leslie. I really know this is an important topic, and I don't hear tons of people talking about it. And I think it should be talked about more. I really truly believe that, because I saw the difference it made in my life. When I started to address these traumas, and you start to realize that that is an accumulation that happens. And that's what kind of shocked me is in how far it went back. I was kind of like, wow, like this is something that, and I mean, we could do another whole show on just.
It might be better to do shorter, maybe even a little shorter editions, right? So
right.
it's not information overload, but I think that, we have opportunity to, what I wanted to say was that I think what makes my work unique from anyone else is that not only am I, developing a real expertise, I wouldn't call myself an expert at this point yet, but I'm developing in the direction of trauma treatment and understanding. I'm a clinical therapist. I've worked in social work for over 30 years, so I have a lot of experience. And my, last decade, I've really focused on doing counseling with people, individuals, adults. But I really am starting to see the connections to the larger world events and to the natural law work, where I'm seeing that, what's going on in the world and our participation in our own sort of enslavement through, where people are clinging to and fighting for the status quo, or, they don't want disruption because they're afraid, right? And when we talk about, government is slavery, or, we're losing our freedom, right? People are afraid and there's resistance happening. And I'm seeing this as part of our trauma response as a collective. And that by healing our individual traumas and understanding how it works, then we can start to see how we are in abusive relationships with the systems that are that we live in.
Right.
And
right.
When we can start to see it from the witness state, where we're not being hijacked by our fear, then we can really see what's closer to what is really true in the world, what's happening, and then be able to empower ourselves to do something about it at a much deeper, broader level than just us as individuals, but for our whole culture, our world, humanity.
Right. And like the aggregate, and you make a great point, you know, like that we have to look at it as in the whole. And that's so key, I think, because you make a great point, too, because I think about all the things that happened with COVID and that people were severely traumatized. Everybody was so traumatized.
And if you have unresolved childhood trauma, you are more vulnerable to these stressors that come along in life, where you may be less resilient and maybe kicked over into deeper triggering of symptoms. So I have clients who, going through the lockdowns and mm-hmm. the fear of that, totally stirred up all their childhood wounding, and their anxiety escalated. They all of a sudden became terrified of driving, or, you know, afraid of infecting someone. Like there's a vulnerability that gets created from the unhealed childhood trauma. And, you know, people will have this reaction and have no concept of what's happening or perspective, because they're being, you know, their trauma is actually being exploited.
Exploited, right. And they have humanity in this state of constant fear.
Mm-hmm.
So that it's just this endless loop that that they've got humanity in. And I get what you're trying to say, Leslie, is that once we deal with our traumas and we start to get to know ourselves and become in tune with ourselves, when you start projecting that outward,
mm-hmm.
is where the magic is going to happen. But you know what I mean? Like it's
right. When you start to see the patterns that it's not just you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's all of us and our children, right? And then, you know, maybe you'll get fired up and you'll be like, this is messed up. Like, I don't want my children repeating this pattern of traumatized behavior and lifestyle and living disconnected from their true self and their core essence, but being, you know, while being an automaton, following the directions of this external culture being imposed upon them,
which it constantly is. Like I think of that too. I brought it up kind of earlier, I didn't grow up with internet, so I didn't have all of those influences coming at me as quick as the internet is, and I who knows where I would have ended up. Like I just think of that. This, we don't even know the effects long term, I don't think, of the
they're
trauma
deep.
From that. They're deep
and pervasive, and that's, you know, I'm starting kind of seeing these maps light up in my own mind about how this works. And in my own mind, it's like kind of weird lately. I've been seeing it as geometry, seeing it as from the center point, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Check out Oculus by Nate Kapp.
That was really great.
It's like the truce and the point is in the center. The point of traumatization ripples out endlessly, right? And all of our traumas, we are all centers of a circle. And when we are rippling out our influence and our energy and then overlapping, all our energies are overlapping, right?
Mm-hmm.
Through our interconnections, our relationships, our communications, our behaviors are working together or against each other, right? It's like this big, you know,
And it's powerful. When yeah. I'm just thinking how powerful that is. Everybody's rippling out, and they're all, like you said, we're all this energy is intermingling, and
yeah.
it's moving. And
yeah. As wow. a big, like, network of yeah. almost like a web, you know, that when people come together and interconnect their goals, their energy, it becomes this web that then has a life of its own, a power. So we right now have this powerful cultural energy that is really based in toxicity. Mm-hmm. And so our goal, you know, I would say for myself, I want to be part of a caring movement that wants to empower people to find that, you know, community and connectedness and growth that is not traumatized.
I agree.
It's not based on trauma.
Exactly right. I wish we had another. I'm looking at the time. Let's say I wish I had another hour. I mean, it just. You're the work you do is so important. I really believe that. I mean that. I think that what you talk about is so needed and important, and a really big part of the healing process is you bringing up and educating people on these traumas. So I really hope people are going to look at your work and look at your presentations, because they're powerful. And I mean, that's how I found you, is through one of your presentations. Can you let people know where they can find your work? Anything you want yes. people to know to find your stuff, the floor is yours for sure.
Yes. So I would say right now, check out Freedom Under Natural Law website and check out any of those presentations there. And particularly, you know, my presentation is Release from Trauma. That is a good overview, I think, a decent overview of mm-hmm. how what is trauma and how does it work and its impacts. So that's a good place to begin. And then I'm on the One Great Work Network, along with a bunch of other folks. Excellent. And most of my, there's a lot of my content is there. I have a website, alivethrive.life, where I do my best to keep that up to date. And you could reach me personally through that website, too. If you wanted to send me an email or leave me a message, there's a way to communicate with me there. If someone wants a consultation or some mentorship around this work that I do, you know, that would be the way to reach me. And then I'm a part of a podcast called Dissolving the Divide with Derek Bartolacelli. And Dissolving the Divide is on YouTube and on Odyssey. I'm also on Odyssey and YouTube. What else?
Wow.
Yeah, there's a lot. Chris Jansen and I are doing some collaborative work, too, a program we're calling Awake on the Lake. It's really in its early stages, but it's going to be pretty cool. We've got a couple episodes. It's very much we're not just sitting in the chair, you know, talking. We are filming while we're out in nature on the lake,
wow.
in the mountains. And
that's amazing.
We talk philosophy. And
all right, there we go, Leslie. I hate to cut you off. We pushed it to the limit. Thank you so much, Pat. Leslie Powers, guys. Thank you for being here, Leslie. Thank you. I'll talk to you guys soon.
Everybody.
You too. Take care, guys. And I'll see you next week. Don't forget Thursday, guys.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio. Revolution Radio, every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, on Studio B for Momentary Zen, with host Zen Garcia, at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
I am Bill Johnson. Some consider my efforts to be an underground law school. I am not an attorney, and I do not give legal advice. I teach. That's lawful and legal. Consider yourself served. You are to appear Wednesday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern.